Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Cool.
Keep my hands off.
No table hitting. We are live right now on Facebook. Happy holidays, guys.
That's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
Fire 420 up. Blaze up, bro.
Not here. You're listening to the Face of Bay Network.
We invite people
of all backgrounds
to share their stories.
Through nuanced conversations
and forward thinking.
And not taking ourselves too seriously.
Everyone's story matters.
Every voice is important.
Life is polarizing.
But not everything is black and white.
Come join us
as we fade to gray.
Join us. Join us. Come to the dark.
Gather.
Side.
Gather.
Gather. Join. All. Assimilate. Welcome, welcome once again to another episode of Fade to Gray. It is, my joy and honor to introduce...
I'm your joy.
Fair enough. You are my Elizabeth joy. And so would that make Chris my honor or your honor, Chris?
Yes. Yes.
How is everybody doing? How are you doing, babe?
I'm great. I'm great. This episode, Nick brought to you by Mason Jars. And the amazing power of their capability of being water bottles. There you go.
Wow.
That was for Nick.
Wow. I'm so glad that you gave us that little sponsorship there. Chris, how are you
you're
doing?
You're welcome.
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing better than I was last. No, you had your chance to talk, babe. You decided to talk about Mason Jars. That's it. You're done for the episode. So moving right along. Yes, I'm doing much better than I was last night. I think last night was like one of the first times I actually experienced a full on like anxiety attack or panic attack. And it just happened to be like right as I'm laying down to go to bed. And so it was rather intense. Ended up eating one of Elizabeth's Xanax to actually fall asleep. But one of the things I noticed is some of the normal coping mechanisms I've had in my past don't work as much as they used to, like prayer. You know, once you've kind of deconstructed a lot of the things that you've thought about Christianity or prayer or God, when I'm in a situation and I'm having an anxiety attack and I'm praying to a God, then my mind is my enemy and all of a sudden like arguing with me and it's deconstructing. And so it's kind of like, there's no peace there. So what I end up having to do is much like meditation. I just had to like, just try to think on just my breathing. That way I wasn't, you know, focusing on, my mind wasn't wondering on this thing I need to worry about or this other thing or how I'm a piece of shit here or how I could be a better parent, better husband, all that stuff that comes flooding in. Sometimes, you know, for people, especially at night, it was just really overwhelming last night. So I will not be going to bed without marijuana again for a long time. that's what happens. It's something, my brain's always been very hyperactive in the evenings. I spoke with my mom today and we were talking about this, how like, I've always had anxiety about going to sleep because I'll just replay my entire day over and over in my head. Growing up, prayer actually really did help for a while. I learned how to kind of basically just give all that stuff over, like cast all my cares to Jesus and then not have to worry about it again. So that's there for years. Prayer really did help me go to sleep. And during that time, I was also in the school of ministry and things like that. So I wasn't able to smoke weed to help me sleep. But truly, as we joked in the beginning, tomorrow being 420, it's been a lot more than just a recreational thing for me. It's been true medication as far as ADHD and anxiety. And so that's what happened last night. Thanks for asking. I'm doing much better today, Chris.
I'm glad you're doing better. You know, I would ask you, Omar, to consider how God takes care of the lilies of the field. You know, they don't toil. They don't turn or spin. They're dressed in God's splendor.
Until they get eaten by a cow or a deer or something like that. And then they're just fodder, end up as a pile of shit. So, yeah, I know there's all kinds of verses that I could supposed to be able to read to make all that go away, right? To make all my anxiety go away.
Like that's right.
Like Philippians and things like that.
Do you remember those really cool, like you'd get these sheets when you go to church and it's like, are you struggling with anxiety? Check this verse out. It was like a prescription verse thing. You know what I'm talking about? Like dealing with guilt. Check this verse out.
I've seen tracks like that.
But
I went to much better churches. We were more creative than that. I don't
know. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, Chris. But, that sounds okay.
Babe. I was joking earlier. Is there something you actually wanted to say?
Well, kind of. I had a busy weekend. I got my first shot for COVID.
Woohoo! And
I got it on Friday evening. And Saturday, I helped to move my music store that I work for.
Yes.
Yeah. We moved our music store. We bought a building earlier in the winter, and we finally got to the point where we could move in. And so I did that all day. By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, though, I was shot. So Saturday night, I slept for 14 hours. Amazing.
Saturday night, you came home from Franklin at the music store and proceeded to go take a nap, which was nice. And then you woke up and was awake for like 30 minutes and went back to bed.
It was an hour. I made sure to stay awake for an hour.
That COVID shot can knock you out. I mean, it really can.
Already gave my boss warning. I said, when I get my second one, I will be unavailable for work that weekend.
So that was a lesson learned for me that night. So I got to hang out with the kids while Elizabeth slept, and it was fun. I really got in one of those modes where there's so much stuff that needs to be done around the house, whether it be mowing and all the springtime activities. Now that like the snow's all melted out here in Western Pennsylvania, our guest doesn't know about that because he's still in Alaska. They have snow for another 3 months, I think.
Ooh. So,
I mean, they don't have spring. They have what they call breakup. And
we're
going to talk about that because somebody asked me the other day, like, isn't this spring like your favorite season? I'm like, no, not really. Like, it's just mud and stuff. I'd rather, looking forward to fall already, and summer hasn't got here yet. So yeah, one of the things I learned though Saturday night, hanging out with the kids, before I introduce our guest Steven today, is just I have decided
to follow Jesus.
I've decided to maybe follow Jesus' example. I have decided that I want to be a kinder person, Chris. I know I have a brass sense of humor, and most of my friends have thick skin, and I enjoy that about myself. But I also have three girls, two of which are already starting to get into puberty. And so when something that should be at a 2 happens, and now it's happening at a 10. And so what I found for myself is I can't afford my own mental health, cannot afford to continue doing life the way that I have been doing. I can't, because I'll show up thinking, okay, there's screaming going on. There's somebody's hurt. So I'll show up all excited. My heart's racing, and I'm showing up at a 10 because I'm matching the level of the kids are at. Then kind of find out that like nothing's happening, and it's just a bunch of emotions and things are just overreacting. So when I show up at a 10, I then overreact too, and then have to calm down and apologize and look at things more soberly. And I'm realizing I can't afford to keep doing that. I need to show up at a 2 always. And that way I'm able to make better sound decisions in the moment and not be like, everybody's going to bed now, And then it's going to have, I'm going to have three females going through puberty at the same time in the house. And
that sounds horrible.
For some reason, everybody else in the house can raise their voices as much as they want and scream and carry on. Elizabeth can scream at the kids every night and they aren't even fazed by it. But if I have the wrong like tone in my voice. These kids are traumatized and they're gonna be talking to their counselor, which my oldest is already has a counselor for it. So yeah, this is something that I'm wanting to work on, but I'm terrified because I don't know if it's actually gonna stick, because I also don't want to be like walked over by people. Cause it seems like a lot of people who are kind and nice and think the best of people often are the ones end up being used and just end up being fodder for people in leadership.
There's a balance, man. There's a balance, but you can do it. You can do it. I like that. I think that's a great idea. Set goals for yourself.
I'll keep you guys updated. So here we go. It is my joy to introduce an old friend of myself. Elizabeth and I met this guy, Stephen DePlanis, when I was in Alaska during our cult experience up there with Master's Commission. And Stephen was a friend of the director of the program. And when I first met him, he was a fellow Southerner. You will hear the Creole in his voice when he talks here very soon. And so we kind of like hit it off right away. He is a kind of philosophical minded type person, deep thinker, likes to debate, is not afraid of conflict. And so I found myself often having really deep, good conversations with Stephen, a lot of them theological in nature. And since then, I don't think we spoke for like over a decade. And over the last year, kind of been reconnecting and hearing about some more of his story. And as his kids are growing up and having their own lives and their own stories, and you know, life has changed so much for myself and Elizabeth in the last 10 years. I wanted to invite Steve on and we can go over kind of what's been going on in his life, and he can tell us how the other side of the tracks is living nowadays. So this is our conservative Christian Republican friend, Stephen DePlanis. Welcome.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Don't be too brutal now.
I won't.
I like how you said conservative and Republican.
They're not the same. They are not the same, man. You know, Republicans are. When I ran for office, Omar, this last go around was Republican, but
all right, for our one listener we have out there, let's go ahead. So you said you ran for office. That would be which office were you running for?
That was the Alaska State Senate. I just ran for that one this past year, and after that experience, I'm kind of done with the Republican Party. I would probably venture to say I'm more libertarian. That's where I want to go, because it lines up more with what I believe. You know, I would like to see the Republican Party change, but it's not.
No,
there's no way. And I don't see it changing anytime soon. So I might as well just go ahead and switch. And that's kind of what we did. So
it's kind of funny, Stephen. One of the first things we kind of talked before we hit record for you guys, and I was like, is there anything that we shouldn't talk about? And Stephen's like, maybe we shouldn't get into politics, because you know that
Manera came out.
and then the very first thing we start talking about is politics. Which you'd be happy to hear, or maybe surprised to hear, that last two political elections I voted libertarian, actually. And I agree with much of the libertarian views. I still think it's pretty much a throwaway vote, like a protest vote, but there are more things that I would agree with too that line up with that. But anyway, let's hear more of just like who you are, Stephen, as much as you feel comfortable talking about your story, before we start, you know, really poking holes in your politics and religion.
Well, I from New Orleans, originally, met my wife, Demita, when, she was just joining the Air Force. She's actually from New Orleans also. And, we were married a few years and we wound up, we grew up Catholic, and, you know, not that we were practicing Catholic, but it was embedded in me. I mean, I hear you guys talk about,
I mean, are any Catholics actually practicing Catholics? I mean,
practicing Catholic or the practicing whatever. But yeah, I've always felt spiritual since I was a kid. I mean, I always felt this closeness to God, and I didn't exactly know how to reach him. I knew that I was supposed to serve him in some capacity. So I thought I was supposed to be a priest, but lo and behold, when I entered puberty, I realized that I could not do without women. So I could not take that vow of celibacy. So I went, you know, and did my thing. And around the age of 30, 32, I think it was about 30 years old. But a couple of years after Demita and I got married, maybe 4 years. And my two oldest kids, Nick and Noel, were 2 years old. And we attended a church, an Assemblies of God church, and God got hold of me, and I served him in that way. At that time, as far as you guys know, who've been, I'm sure you've been there, you know, you've had the, if you've had the salvation experience, you know, your life changes and you just get rid of everything. I had this collection of CDs, and I used to DJ back in the day. I had the albums, dude. I had the, you remember the old 2 liter Coke crates? The albums would fit perfect in there, you know? And I had like six of these things, and I had just tons of albums. I got rid of them.
I'm sure your kids have all those now, because don't you know, albums have made a comeback. I have albums than I do CDs right now.
That's good. That's really good. I wish I would have held on to them, because I'd be a millionaire right now probably. But because some of those albums were priceless, you know. Anyway,
can I ask you a question about that real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
What'd you do with them? Did you smash them? Because you couldn't sell them, because then that was giving sin back to the world. So what'd you do with them?
I didn't know that back then, so I sold them.
You sold them. Our youth minister had us smash our CDs in what was called the sin bin. And I remember my mom freaking out. Like,
that was a skit when I was a kid.
Really? Yeah. My mom freaking out, because she paid all this money for all these really good CDs I had. And then I went and smashed them in the sin bin.
Oh, I remember in Alaska, with Assemblies of God, the Master's Mission thing that I was a part of, it was every... like first of every year, there was a giant bonfire that Ron would do and encourage everybody to get all of their, I mean, it got, purity culture was very real out there though. I mean, you were burning just pictures of people that, you know, might be a soul tie of something that's holding
soul ties, man.
Oh, yeah. Like, yep. So you didn't stop at albums. You didn't stop at like entertainment. You're looking for anything that might be holding you back from Jesus, you know? So it's, T-shirts, yeah, it doesn't matter.
I think back on that, and you know, it may have been a little extreme. I didn't know any better, so I sold them. I mean, I didn't want to just give them away, so I sold them, and actually gave the albums to my brother. Let him, you know, let him burn in hell, I guess. I don't know, but but actuality, he my brother passed away about 2 years ago, and he was, you know, I led him to the Lord right 2 weeks prior to him dying. Didn't even know that that was going to happen. But
sorry for your loss. That's pretty recent.
A couple of years. He was the last of my family to go, so I'm the last one and left on earth with him. But it's amazing that most of the albums that I got rid of are now like on my phone.
Yeah.
You know, at that time in my life, I had to give them up, and I did. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reasons, I don't know. But looking back on it, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm glad I did, because there were some things I couldn't have done and decisions made that I couldn't have made with, you know, if I had not made a decision to do this. And then it was just kind of a thing that went off from there. But I was in Mississippi when that happened. And we wound up in Alaska. That was the Eielson Air Force Base is where we were up, and that's where I met Pastor Ron. And he and I became good friends. You know, I was with his youth ministry while it was there, and I left right before. In fact, the Master's Commission started like right about a couple of few months after we left, and then we went. From there, we went to Spain. My wife got out of the military She was going to do 20 years, but had a medical separation, medical retirement. She's 100% disabled right now. We went to Spain for a year, and then from there she got out, and then we went to Florida for 2 years. I went to Bible school at Brownsville Assembly of God. And from there I got a job as a worship pastor in California. And that was a horrible experience with that church. I was my first paid position on a church. It wasn't really even paid. I was supposed to get paid, but I wasn't. And while I was there, I was brought there. Actually, I don't think it was to work for the church, but I had a heart attack and then wound up having 7 bypasses. Ooh. And it was in the it was one of the best hospitals in California, in the nation, for heart surgery. So I kind of went. I believe that that's why I was out there. You know, I believe that there's destiny. You know, I know you've heard that, Omar, a lot with Master Commission about destiny and stuff like that. And I believe we all have a purpose, and things, you know, line up for a certain way. And then from there, from that experience with the church, we almost gave up on ministry. In fact, we rode the fence there for about, from California, we moved to Georgia, and then we stayed there, and I was, you know, I was straddling the fence, and we did our thing, and but I never gave up on God. That was the whole thing. I never gave up on Him, because He was always in the forefront, and that just brought me back to when I was a child, because God was always my go-to. If something was going on, I would go to Him, and I would felt that. I would, even as a Catholic, even as a young child, I felt that. That connection with Him, and same thing here. And then I wound up working for my uncle he owns a bunch of restaurants, managing a restaurant for him. And that lifestyle got too familiar for me. And I got to a point where, okay, I'm either going to go headlong and do this, or I'm going to go into ministry again and, you know, give my life to that. And, you know, because there were too many temptations, and I'm not talking
about at this point in your life, Stephen. How old were you? And you know, I know you've been married for a few years. How were you having kids at that point?
Oh yeah, yeah. The kids were born. They were at that point. Nick and Noel were about 16, 50. They're twins, 15 to 16 years old. And Andrew was about 10. And you know, they were, you know, in school and everything. And we all at that point felt a pull back to Alaska. You know, we always felt that we were supposed to come back here, but didn't know when. And it was my wife, you know, she didn't want to come back to the cold. You know, she didn't like the cold. She was understandable. Not many people do. I mean, you know, as you know, it's cold up here. And I was at that point, and you know, so I was going to make a decision. And had I made a decision to not go back into ministry, I mean, we could have ended up in divorce. We could have ended, there was a lot of ifs that could have happened. And thank God it didn't. And so what happened was, while we were, and this was in Florida, mind you, we were living in Destin, Florida, and a nice place. Destin's beautiful. And Ron was itinerating with his team, the TGM team. And he was coming through, and he stopped at the house, and I hadn't seen him in years. And that was kind of the catalyst that got us back to Alaska. You know, not that he talked us into it, but it was an open door, you know, that okay, we can go back and go there and go into ministry. And we made that decision and we sold everything we owned and moved back to Alaska. And then we worked with Pastor Ron with TGM for about 2 years. I didn't feel like that was what God actually called us up there to do. So that's when I took the pastorate in Nenana, village on, you've been in Nenana.
Yeah,
sure.
I like Nenana a whole lot. It's one of the few villages that are in the road system and stuff like that. So I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a very, the great experience, you know, working with them. And then from there, I started working at a church here in town, and then was outreach.
Is that Anchorage?
Yeah, that was Anchorage. Yeah, Anchorage. Because we
had to translate that for non-Alaskans. Town is Anchorage.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right.
There's like two towns in Alaska. It's either Fairbanks or Anchorage, depending on where you live. So.
Yeah, that's it. And then town, or the big village they call Anchorage, and then yeah, so. Yeah, we came to Anchorage, and we've been here for about 5 years now. So I didn't now mind you, the only paid position I ever had in ministry was in Nenana. Okay. And
well, technically the pastor of the worship position was supposed to be paid too, but
it didn't happen. It was supposed to be paid, but it didn't. I didn't get anything. In fact, we went into bankruptcy because of that, because of the surgery and everything else, and we had to file for bankruptcy. So I had, look, dude, let me tell you, ministry, church, you know, if it could leave a bad taste in somebody's mouth, it's mine, you know. And but I've always said that if people weren't involved in church, it would be great. Bottom line, I mean, because there were some really rotten people, you know, and they get in and they want to take control. This is a platform for them. They want to, you know, they can't make it in the world. Right. You see this a lot with Christian musicians. They'll break into the Christian music industry because they're not good enough to break into the world. So they'll take it. And the Christians, oh, we love you, we'll take it, you know, but their heart's not there or nothing. You know, so and it's the same thing in pastors, you know, but if you get
exactly, if you're charismatic and you're a good speaker, then they'll put you on stage no matter what your life is like behind the scenes. So,
yeah, even if you talk in circles.
Oh, yeah. Got the anointing, man. Here's a good example. I never did get a degree from a credentialed university like, you know, like Northwest or something like that. You know, I worked on my own. I did Berean.
Oh yeah. Well, Berean, I went to Master's Commission. We were elite.
You did it.
We were elite.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
God, there's no spiritual pride there at all.
But even in the Assemblies of God, if you don't have that degree and you're a pastor, you're looked down upon. Because I can give your old pastor at Wasilla Assembly,
Unifeld?
Was not, no.
Kalins.
We used to work.
Oh,
Kalins. Yeah.
Ed Kalins.
Yeah. He wasn't credentialed. He's still doing.
Yeah, he went
there.
from
North Carolina.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he just does his thing. Yeah. And that's where you are, aren't you? You're North Carolina?
No, I have family there. We're in Pennsylvania. Oh, okay. Pennsylvania currently.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm gonna.
So yeah.
Let's put a fork in your story right here, because I know there's probably some questions that Chris and Elizabeth have. And there was something you said a little while back that I kind of want to unpack a little bit. Just sit there and I want to hear you guys' thoughts on it, like kind of everyone's thoughts on it. But you threw out the word destiny earlier. You know, it sounds like that you're a big believer. And as you're telling your story, it sounds like a lot of like shitty things happen along the way, you know, but you kept going forward in, you know, this thing we call Christianity. Mm-hmm. You had lots of reasons to stop, a lot of excuses to not keep going. But it seems like with your perspective of destiny, you were able to look at situations like, you know, the church may have caused you a heart attack, but at least you were in the place where there was like one of the best hospitals in the world to get the help that you needed at the time. You know, sort of thing, you know, like destiny, you know, like I'm in the right place at the right time. I don't know how I personally feel about destiny. And that's kind of why I wanted to bring this up, because I want to agree, but I don't know how I feel about it. I want to hear like you guys' thoughts as well. Because I definitely think things could happen for a reason. If there's a higher power, you know, if there's a God who loves us and is trying to orchestrate things to happen in our life, the problem about that is like so many of those things were shitty And so to say, hey, there's a God who loves us, who's allowing all these shitty things to happen in our life to point us in the direction and get us where we're supposed to be because he loves us, you know, and knows best for us. You know, that's where it kind of breaks down the debt, like, cause if there is destiny, like it would mean that there's somebody orchestrating that, correct? Yeah. And so I'm sorry, Elizabeth was giving me faces, so I was making sure that I wasn't like going too far ahead in my thought process here.
I was just trying to, I was waiting for the succinct button on it, but Chris looks like he has something to say. I'm still processing my own thoughts on that.
Okay. I don't know. My thoughts on destiny are probably pretty jaded.
Well, that's fine. That's why I want to hear like all sides. I want to let Stephen unpack it more too, but I want to hear you guys' thoughts on it as well. Cause this is something that I'm like, what do I think about that? Cause you're right, Stephen, there, like it was always like, you know, there's a call, there's a purpose on your life. You know, everything happens for a reason. And when you live that way and you believe that way, and I did for many years, it's like, it makes things make sense. It makes prayer easier. It makes all these, but when you live in a life now where things are a lot more gray for me, where it's like, yeah, I could see that there's potentially a intelligent design that's behind all this. Like, so destiny, there could be a destiny, but I've now at a point, and I may be jaded too, Chris, but I'm at a point where if there is intelligent design, it's not loving. I can't say that like any of the stuff that this intelligent design thing is doing is for, is love.
Does destiny only, so you're saying destiny only applies if there's an intelligent design for something bigger?
Unless there's destiny for something else, unless somebody can have a better definition of it, I'm down.
Here's my thought process on this. I think that there's a huge reason why people in, you know, from Western cultures think that they have a destiny or believe that their life needs to have some sort of purpose. And the reason is that they all look forward to the Savior, the second coming of Jesus. This millennial perspective of there's a Savior coming and into the world where all the wicked will, of course, receive their due punishment. And everyone who's done well in life will receive some sort of a reward, really set us on some sort of a line segment thinking pattern of time, and also keeps us from actually enjoying and doing what we want here on earth, because in heaven there's going to be riches.
Your definition.
So give everything
destiny?
Away now.
Say what?
That's your definition of destiny, or that's why you just think the idea even exists is because
I think the concept exists because of a millennialist perspective of the second coming of Jesus. I don't think that when the Jews were thinking about death, that they were thinking about an afterlife. I don't think that they were thinking about, you know, what is my purpose in this world? I think they thought, well, my purpose is to live and serve God, and that's it.
Wikipedia's definition, destiny, sometimes referred to as fate, from is predetermined course of events, and so it may be conceived as a predetermined future, whether general or of an individual. So I think that maybe we're putting our own baggage on the word, but like. Possibly, because in that definition, you don't necessarily have to have a intelligent design, like I was suggesting.
Say it again. What was the definition?
Destiny's.
He's using Wikipedia as his source. First of all,
is that
go to Webster's?
I'll take it. What does it say?
Destiny, sometimes referred to as fate, So, you know, whatever you think, what's your fate in life? Okay. Is predetermined course of events. It may be
predetermined. That means that someone has determined it. So therefore it has to involve some sort of an intelligent design. If it's predetermined, yeah, then someone has orchestrated it.
And who's predetermined it, if that's the case, you know?
Right.
I guess that would be just in the eye of the beholder or whatever you actually believe, but you would have to believe that there's a higher power in order to believe that you have any sort of fate or destiny.
Yeah. I think by very definition, I think you'd have to.
I'm sorry for that interlude or whatever, but
no, that's good just to clarify that I wanted to make that connection with you, because I know that destiny was taught a whole lot under the MC, you know, umbrella, you know, it's your destiny and this and that, you know, and I like to think of it as, this is for me. All right. And I'm not trying to, whenever I say anything, it's not like, ooh, you know, my experience is yours and you have to experience it too. No, that's not it. Is that when I see something happen that's beyond the normal natural circumstances, I have to put my trust in a higher power or God, that it's Him that's orchestrating it some kind of way. Now, either it's by, you know, I don't know what it is, you know, making decisions. I have no idea. Right. But I can, you know, I can only tell you what works, you know, how I see it. And without that, at least for me, there's like no hope, man. I mean, like when Jesus said that no greater love as a man have but to lay down his life for his friend, his brother. And that's the thing that we miss as a church, as Christians, is that he was the ultimate servant. He died. All right. These people put him to death because, you know, because this is what I believe, you know, we get into the sacrifice and everything else. I'm not going to get into theology. I'm just getting into the basics here, you know, is that this man gave his life for a friend. All right. And then you look at like, let's say someone who steps in when they see somebody being beat up on the street and puts their life in danger to save that person. Right. And to me, that's the ultimate sacrifice for somebody, is that human life trumps everything. Is that if I see somebody suffering, if I see somebody hurting or getting beat up or something like that, I'm going to intervene on it. And that's kind of how I look, how Jesus was, that the human race was being beat up and he intervened and he saved us. And to me, that's the ultimate, form of love, is that service to people, because there's nothing more than to, like, you know, to help someone that's in need, and then to see the look on their face and just that, you know, and you're not expecting anything in return. You know, I don't know. I may stand before the judgment seat of God and he may say, depart from me. I mean, I don't know you. So that sucks for me, you know, but I mean, this is the way I live. This is the way that I, you know, that I get through life.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. And it's very honorable, Steve. And don't get me wrong, just because, you know, I or we, somebody may disagree with you, I still have a lot of respect and honor. Like, even as you told your story, some of the things that you had gone through with your wife's health, your health, the heart stuff, mm-hmm. the way your first job, them not paying you. And I'm sure there's so many other stories you could probably tell.
Oh, yeah.
Of running into with the people in church and church leadership, especially because we celebrate the wrong things in church leadership and we exalt the wrong people. But that's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to really derail the conversation asking about fate or destiny. I just thought that was really kind of fascinating, because I was connecting with you and I was trying mm-hmm. to actually ask myself and our listener probably, you know, it's the same thing sometimes too. Like because like you said, the reason it's important for you to connect the fate and destiny thing, because it also connects with the hope, you know, story. And that's why without that sense of greater purpose, you know, there wouldn't be that hope to connect everything to. And so that makes absolute sense.
I disagree. I think it's bullshit. Well, because what about the person who doesn't believe the same thing? Do they not get to have hope just because they don't believe in a higher power?
You can have hope however you want to have hope. Why do you need to say it's bullshit that somebody else wants to believe that?
No, you just said their hope. You just said that you have no hope unless you have a purpose.
That's what Steve said. And I said, okay. And I said, I respect that.
Okay. You can respect it, but you can't say you can't just straight up say, hey, you cannot have hope unless you have purpose.
Is that what I didn't say that.
But that's what you said.
Did I say that, Elizabeth?
I didn't hear. It'd be awesome for you to go back and rewind this and hear yourself say that.
We'll be able to do that. Well, let me clarify then, so there's no confusion, and we can actually do that later. And so I'll be like, Chris is right, but it doesn't matter, because the point is,
damn it, Nick just started watching. If he was watching beforehand, he'd back me up.
If somebody like Steve, who was telling the story, and that's what I was understanding, how he connected again, like the fact of fate or destiny, which is what my original question was, to hope, and started telling the Jesus story, because the reason why it's important for him that to have fate or destiny, because without having that, like, where's the hope? Like, is what did I miss that in what you, like, how you were connecting that to, like, why the Jesus story is so important to you? From, because I'm just trying to connect the two, because that's where the question originally was. But I'm saying that I respect somebody who needs that, but I would agree with you, Chris, that, like, everybody doesn't have to believe that way. And I don't think that I or Steve or anybody was saying that you have to believe that way in order to have hope. But
people, I don't think that at
people
all.
People find hope that way.
Some people find hope my joy is taking care of my wife. You know, I love doing that, you know, and I believe that that's my purpose right now. But that's me. All right. I just want to make that clear, is that I'm not trying to put that on anybody else, you know, because it's not up for me to decide. You know, I can tell you my experience and then you take it for that. I'm not going to, like I said, it's not my experience. You have to live my experience. And that way, if you do this, here's the formula. If you do this, 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 and this, then you're going to have a relationship with God. All right. That's not how it works. All right. This is how it works with me. This is what I did. And this is where I can put my boast in, is that, yes, I, this is where I find my joy. It's where I find my purpose. And a lot of people, they might find it in a tree. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea, you know, or a purpose in building a unicycle. I mean, it is just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it works.
And I understood. That. And I thought just saying that in a different way. I mean, that's pretty much what I was understanding it as. I mean, and I definitely think that, like, if you don't have, and that Chris also leads into what I was wanting to say, because if you don't believe in fate or destiny, like, you know, like you said, there's many different ways of having hope and finding hope in things, but, like, you know, so your argument, and unpack this for me then more, Chris. So, like, you don't have to have a sense of a higher calling in order to have hope.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I think that if anyone wants to kind of like hear almost the exact opposite perspective that Steve has, they should go listen to our latest episode with Luke King, who was essentially saying that at the end of his life, he doesn't want to look back and have his, you know, grandkids or whatever say, man, you know, grandpa sure was faithful. Like, no, he wants to be able to look back and say, man, I did everything that I wanted to do with the time that I was given in this life. Right. And so I'm not saying that that's, you know, the antithesis of hope or, you know, destiny or anything like that, but it's, you know, what from what I'm hearing from Steve, he's saying, my, you know, the greatest thing I could ever do would be to lay down my life for other people. The greatest thing, you know, the love that I give is, you know, the joy of my life is taking care of someone else. And so I'm hearing him being very giving and being very selfless, and that's excellent. But I'm wondering if that's not something that the church has ingrained in him that he has to do, that he has to look after everybody else and find his fulfillment in that and completely neglect himself. Whereas I think Luke King, on the other hand, maybe takes it in another extreme. And I wonder if there's some sort of a balance there that's an actual, you know, place where people can maybe experience true hope or true destiny or something like that.
And that's, you know, a great point. And I hope you're okay with us unpacking this for a little bit, Omar. Stephen.
No, this is fine because I like what he said about did the church, you know, make it this way. And I was, to be honest with you, I was like this when I was a little kid. I was very, very giving. It was really before I even had any type of experience with God. But to reiterate what Chris said about the church, I think that they, here's the key, is that they promote that. They promote the service part and giving up your life, but they don't show it because they don't do it because it's all about self-serving. And that's my experience with churches. When I see a pastor that's, you know, sits on a church, you know, as the pastor, and he appoints his own board, you know, so he can have that board make decisions for him so he can put, you know, money into a retirement or do this or that or whatever to satisfy himself, when that's not what Jesus did. You know, that's the world. If you want to do that, then go get a business somewhere. I mean, that's fine, you know, but don't use the church to do it. But unfortunately, that's what the church has been doing. The church, I could do it. All three of you guys have had just like me, we've had bad experience with that, you know, and I hate it. And that's why I'm kind of taking a break from it all right now, you know, but I'll never give up on God, because it's not him that does it, because he does. And I know, you know, is it destiny or whatever, but I refuse to believe that. All right. That God sees the good in each of us. I don't care if you're Jeffrey Dahmer, he sees the good in people. All right. And we make our own choices as we travel this road called life. You know, we have several different, you know, avenues we can take, and if we, you know, it depends on which one we choose. And you can think like the Calvinists and say that, well, God is in control of it all, and he's going to make you do that. But I don't believe that. You know, I believe that God made us, and then he kind of, you know, he's there and he's influential, but he doesn't, you know, it's like you, Omar, taking Elizabeth and making her do something against her will, right? God would never do that with me or you or any one of us, you know? So if he wants us, you know, he gives us the desires of our heart. So what is the desire of your heart? Chase it. You know, if it's serving other people, then do it. If it's, you know, growing the biggest grow farm, then go grow it. You know, I mean, this is what you have to do. You know, the desire there, you know, so if that makes sense, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I like that word, especially the grow farm part. Yeah.
I'd like to
prophesying over you, bro.
I'd like to pull this back around though, because you're talking about being involved in church and going, and your only paid job was as pastor of Nanana. I always say it wrong.
Yeah.
And so now, but now you are taking a step back from church. I'm curious to hear your story of that process of stepping back, but still wanting to believe in God, because that's for me what did it in. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm done. I can't. If you guys say that this is what God is, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't. After that, if you guys heard of Little Beaver Camp, I'm sure you did. Yeah, Little Beaver.
Omar and I have, but not Chris.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Chris, it was.
And our listeners.
It's a camp up here that the Assemblies of God owns. And, you know, they do kids camps there, retreats, you know, crap like that. So 2 years ago, I got a job there. And I tell you what, dude, it was the best job I ever had. I was the camp cook, the camp manager, and also was the kind of head of the interns, you know, and kind of like giving them guidance and stuff like that, both me and my wife. And I felt like I was in my element, man. I loved that place. And I stepped down from my position at the church as worship leader and outreach pastor. I was a youth pastor there too, because nobody had stepped in, because my son Andrew was going there at their youth group, which is another story. Maybe we'll get into it later. I don't know. But anyway, I was working it, and I loved it. I love this cooking, you know. And the only job I ever had where I was working 16 hours a day and actually look forward to getting up and going to work the next day. And felt like that I was in my element. But what happened was when the COVID hit, all right, the camp got shut down, and I felt a shift, you know, like something just shifted. I don't know what it was. You call it spiritual, you call it, you know, whatever. The camp shut down and the church is shut down. You know, you guys were involved in it. All the churches shut down. So I had a problem with that because I felt like it was all, you know, this is not right. We shouldn't be doing it. So, when the church is shut down, I sent a letter to the district office, to my pastor, to the church board of my home church, and the district office, and the general superintendent of the national office, asking them to clarify for me when scripture says certain things and the constitution says something, but yet we're doing the opposite. And I wanted the clarification there, you know, that they could do that. Well, they sent me some political spin, and I have it all. I'm not going to go into it all right now because I'm kind of debating on whether or not I want to make a video about this, kind of like a, you know, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But at least I'm getting the point out right here. And and I knew from that point that my credentials, in fact, I was ordained with the Assemblies of God. And I knew my credentials would, because I was, you know, would come under question because I was questioning leadership. You don't question leadership in the church. You should know that, you know, especially
not in the Assemblies of God.
No. You don't question it. And I did. And I felt the Lord, you know, speak to my heart that, you know, I'm going to lose my credentials. I don't care about the credentials. I really don't. Although I did work hard for them, you know.
And how fast it also became political. Yeah. And you worked hard for it and you paid for them too. You have to pay your dues
every year.
Yeah.
With real money.
$400-something a year. And I didn't have a job. They let me go, you know, and I didn't have a job to pay for it. But anyway, they just shut the camp down at that point. Well, at that point, we just kind of, I was doing an online thing, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, I was doing a thing called Late Night Anchorage, and I talk about the political, side of stuff and just, you know, and to make it fun, you know, and, about May timeframe, I guess, we got a call from one of the church board, the guy's wife, who happens to be a nurse. Okay. And she was tired of not meeting. So she knew that we wanted to have fellowship. So she said, can we do a Bible study? Absolutely. Let's do one. So we started one and we did a couple of months or whatever. And word got out to the pastor that I was having a Bible study with And of course, the church is not open by then. And I wasn't starting a church. I was just doing a Bible study, you know, just meeting and doing worship and just kind of hanging out.
Pastors hate that.
Yeah, they do. Especially this one did. And I got a call from the pastor. It was in July. And Andrew, my son, was leaving in July. He was going to Boston. All right. He moved to Boston. And I thought the pastor was calling me to find out what was going on with that. All right. Cause he, you know, Andrew was, you know, kind of went from one way to another in a, you know, in a time period. I thought he was concerned. All right. That's what I thought he was calling me about. I had no clue that he had problems with me doing this Bible study, because every time I would do, if I'd go online, I would build up the church. I'd say, you know, go listen to him, you know, do his sermon and this and that. And cause at that point I was still a part of that church. And anyway, he called and he started chewing me out for having a Bible study. He started rebuking me. He started, you know, in the name of Jesus, you're rebelling and this and that. And I'm like, I'm having a Bible study. I mean, I couldn't understand it, you know, and it kind of blew me. It blew me away, and I wasn't expecting it. So I put on speakerphone so my wife and my daughter could witness what he was saying, and they couldn't believe what he was saying. And then he wanted me to come to church because the churches were fixing they had just going to open back up in July. He wanted me to come and repent before the church. And then we could reconcile, brother, you know, come, we want you to come home and this and that. And I thought about it and I was like, okay, yeah, I guess so, you know. And then after I got off the phone, I was like, you know, no damn way I'm doing that. Yeah, I didn't do anything wrong. What do I have to go apologize and repent for? You know, so I didn't show up. And at that point, it just kind of went. And then a couple of weeks later, I get a video come across my timeline of the general superintendent of the national office and the children's leader of the children's ministry, and they're selling what they call a buddy mask. You guys probably know who Buddy Barrel is. If he doesn't know who Buddy Barrel is, Buddy Barrel. He kind of looks like SpongeBob, right? He's this character, and the kids take the Buddy Barrel and they put money in it, and then they give it to missions. It's a, you know, it's a decent idea, you know, and they've been doing it forever. But you know, so they had this thing called a Buddy Barrel mask, all right. And it was a mask that they put, you know, they were selling the kids. All right. And to me, and I had it on my show, and I made my mistake was making fun of the general superintendent, because you could see this like almost like plastic. You could see they couldn't breathe in it. And I was making fun of it, you know? And but the bishop of our district didn't find it amusing. All right. And, cause I would say stuff like, you know, suffocate your child for $7, you know, and so that got me a letter of reprimand against my credentials. Jeez. And also it got me fired from the camp. They fired me from that point from the camp. And I was like, okay, so I started like, okay, so, you know, that was it. What else could I do? All right. And then about a month later in October, now every quarter, the general presbytery meets, that's the big wigs. That's the bishop, the assistant superintendent, who happens to be the pastor of my church that I went to. And then all the presbyters, the district presbyters, the regional presbyters, and they meet. Well, at that meeting, I don't have access to that meeting because I'm a low guy on the totem pole. Peon, exactly. A complaint was lodged against me by the pastor of this church and the assistant superintendent that I was dividing the church and I was holding meetings in my house and trying to steal their youth. All right. And that was beyond me. I didn't understand that at all. A picture of that somebody had taken offline of me in my living room, you know, having a worship session and a letter written saying that this is what I was doing. Now, why would a pastor, all right, have a problem with you wanting to worship the Lord at your house with people? You know, and you guys coming from that kind of background, if you were still in that. And now you know why, you know, after we just said that this is all, you know, a lot of this is just a facade. A lot of people just take this position as they don't even believe in God. They just do because they get paid. They have a degree and then they lead people. And it's really a shame because they don't care about people. They care about themselves. Anyway, I got this complaint lodged against me. So I fought it. I was like, I want the opportunity to address my accuser. That's biblical. If you guys know the Bible, that's how you would address a sinner, somebody who sins against you. You address him by himself. And then if he don't listen to you, then you take another person with you. If not, after that, you know, then you take it before the church. And then if they still don't listen to you, then you throw them. That's it. You forget about them, right?
That's not how the Assemblies of God does it, though, Stephen.
I have a question for you, Stephen, about that too. Where were your pastor friends who, you know, stood beside you all the time before? Did you have people that were coming to bat for you saying, no, this, like, I know this guy, he's not doing this? Or were you just like that those people stay silent?
I've had people contact me by messenger saying that I believe in what you're doing, but I can't say anything about it because I'll lose my job. I'll lose my pastor. I'll lose it. Yeah. So this is really, you know, this is how it works, you know? And there was one pastor that did, Wasilla Assembly of God is now called Summit. That's where my son Nick was youth pastor over there. His pastor happens to be the Central Region Presbyter. He was the only one that saw that this was wrong, and he stood up for me. All right. And he got called to the carpet. So I haven't heard from him since Nick left, and he probably was told to this guy's bad news, just stay away from him. But anyway, he went to bat for me because I asked, okay, because the superintendent had told me you need to meet with the pastor of your church and you guys work it out, basically. And I said, well, I want a mediator there because that's the Bible calls for that, you know, and then I want somebody there that can mediate the thing. And then this pastor that was Nick's boss offered to do it. And the other pastor said, no, that it just wanted me and him. Right. So I did that and I recorded the phone call and of course I didn't get in trouble for that, but he said, you know, you can't record the phone call. And I can, because according to Alaska law, as long as one party knows it's being recorded, you can record it. And, but I think he knew I was recording because he's very nice to me. Very nice. But he wasn't willing to give. He still accused me of splitting the church. And I was like, I can't. He said, I need to cease and desist doing it. And I'm not like doing it. Now, in the meantime, the guy that was meeting at my house, the board member, he left the church. He got off the board because he saw some stuff that, and I'm not at liberty to say what was going on, but he, after he got off the board, he told me some things that would probably make your head swim. All right. And which just kind of, you know, yeah, probably not, but
probably
I don't want to,
we were there.
I don't want to make, you know, secondhand allegations. I'm not going to do that. But anyway, it just confirmed what I was already feeling. And then what I kind of knew in my own heart. So, and in that complaint that was threatened that my credentials wouldn't be renewed. And and then it drew off and I kept asking, can I have an audience with the president? I want my opportunity to address the allegations. I want the opportunity. It was never given to me. They finally dismissed the credentials. I did file a complaint with the national office. The national office told me that I need to figure it out with the local because they don't get involved in that. And I was like, and this was their HR department. Well, why do you have an HR department if you don't deal with, you know, who am I to go to? The very person you're telling me to go fix the problem and go complain to is the person I have the problem with. How can I do that? You need to help me. So they did. And same thing, this was the regional, Western regional presbyter, the big wig of the entire West Coast. I was on a Zoom call with him and the bishop and the pastor and the rest of the presbytery was on it. And it was just me and him. He questioned me. And basically he tried to get me admit that I was wrong in what I was doing. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then they didn't want me to record that phone call either. But I did anyway, because I screw you, you know, I mean, because I'm not going to go out of here without it. You know, it's kind of like Bon Jovi, you know, I'm going out in a blaze of glory and I'm going to take a few of you with me when I go. So that's why I recorded it. And because I wanted to refer back to some of the things that were said and some things that were said in that phone call. And now I have an appeal, because once your credentials are dismissed, then you can appeal it. And it's under appeal right now. It's going to go before their board in June. And then it's probably going to come out the same way. But at this point, at least with the Assemblies of God, I'm done. Screw them. You know, our friend Pastor Ron, he called me because he didn't know what was going on, because once we kind of left TGM, he and I kind of, you know, not that we, you know, are not good friends anymore. We just aren't on that level. You know, yeah.
Lot's happened in the last 10 years.
A lot's happened.
Yeah. And then plus with Yolanda passing away last year, he and I didn't. But anyway, he texted me and asked me, you know, hey, I heard, you know, hey, what's going on? And I told him, and he was concerned. He just said, just don't burn any bridges, you know, reach out to the bishop and see if you can work it out. And I did. I called. I tried to get audience with him alone. I didn't even get a return phone call. Right. So it's like they totally just like ignore me, you know, like just like, and then I think about like I said, I don't want to get into all the stuff right now, but stuff happened with my son a couple of years ago. And that was really wrong. And
do you mind if we talk about that at all a little bit? Are you at liberty?
No, we found out he was about 14 years old. He was struggling with homosexuality. And he's 14 years old. I mean, it's a child, you know, I mean, he don't know. So, he makes a post on his Facebook page that he's, you know, he's gay. And a couple of years later, he starts getting touched by God. It's some certain things. Right. And he's kind of not, you know, not that he's not struggling with it, but he's kind of, you know, more focused on serving God. So he gets on the worship team. He gets on this other stuff. He wants to, you know, do internship at Little Beaver and do some other things. And, he never did. I wouldn't call it a mistake, but it was actually, I think a God thing that he didn't erase the message that he put on there. And somebody found it, made a comment about it, and he was removed from all positions, worship, children's ministry, everything, right? Simply for having struggle, all right?
And a comment he made when he was 14 years old.
Yeah, it was wrong. So as us being parents, as a Christian, you know, you think certain way. You think, you know, I have my thoughts on homosexuality, you know, but it's not for me. I'm not attracted to men. And I had to put myself in his head. You know, how is he feeling? I have no idea. So you have to have that compassion. You can't just say, stop thinking about that. That's dumb. That's what the church wants you to do. They want you to change. It's this, you know, the big pink elephant. You know, if we just ignore it, it'll go away. All right.
Well, how so we reached out. How has having a gay son like made your theology change? How has that confronted a lot of the things that maybe the Bible says or the denomination lines? When you're actually confronted with, you know, a son who you clearly love, your son. So how do mm-hmm. you reconcile that with the Bible and the religion that you're in?
The Bible doesn't tell me to disown him. In fact, it tells me to love him, you know, and that's what I do. You know, we're living on the base right now, you know, on Elmendorf. And he's up until he's 21, he can stay with us, you know, and he's living with us now. He does his thing. It's his life. You know, I can't make choices for him. Now, when he was under my roof as a minor, you know, there were when it actually came out, one of my, and this stems back, and you may kick me in the butt for this. That's fine. But this is how we raised our kids. I was in with the no dating. I didn't want my kids to go through all the drama, you know, because I know what I went through. So until you're 18, I don't want you dating. And while you're living in my house, and even after you live in my house, and you know, if you're still living in my house, then you can, you know, we'll talk about it, how we're going to work it. Well, Nick pretty much got out when he was 18. Noelle was just she's just Noelle, you know what I mean? She does her thing and she's not really, wasn't really concerned. And with him, it was the same thing. I said, I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's a male or female. I said, it's still the same rule. And he abided by it, and which is good. And then when he made 18, he's struggling with it, you know, and there was nowhere for him to go. Because you just expected just to, you know, I could speak to him on the lust issue, you know, because that's mainly what the problem is, because you have to separate love from lust. There's a big difference there. And a lot of times when we think it's love or we think it's an attraction, it's actually just a lustful thing. And we have to get past that. And I tried to get him, you know, to find who you are, you know, not find who you are in your sexuality, but who you are as a person, you know? And he was going in that direction, but he was hurt by that. He was hurt by the shaming, because that was a big part of it, you know.
Yeah, and you're going to hell too is probably
a
huge thing, dude.
I can't say that. I mean, I don't know, you know, because like you guys, your podcast Fade to Gray, all right, because we're taught there's black and there's white. I'm not talking about racial stuff. I'm talking about, you know, ideas, morals, values, you know, things that we live for. It's either black or it's either white. Well, no, you guys, there's gray areas, right? And I disagree with that. Yes, there is gray areas, but there's all kinds of colors in there because God made the entire spectrum. So there's not only gray and black and white, but there's also pinks and yellows and greens and reds and blues and everything else that, you know, that we want to lump on one side or the other side. And we have to take that into consideration. There you go. It's all the colors there. And
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with, there's like this new thing going around with theologians that are pretty progressive, where they're saying that the word that was translated to homosexual in the Bible actually doesn't really refer to a committed relationship between two consenting adults, regardless of gender or sex, but it actually refers to a cultural practice of pedophilia. Are you aware of this?
I've heard that. I'm not very familiar with it, but yeah. I've heard about it. Yeah, I haven't like delved into it and found out anything. What I do is I lean more towards the Hebrew translations and the way that because Christianity stems out of Judaism, so everything that we know comes from there. All right, and and this is a big bad word that people don't want to talk about, but Kabbalah, right? You probably heard it through Madonna, somebody like that. Mm-hmm. That's the Jewish teaching that goes deep.
Dark magic.
Like they don't, like Christianity doesn't even touch anything. I mean, we stay superficial. We don't go, we don't go any further into that, you know? But they do, they go deep and some of that stuff. And this is a thing that I find fascinating is that I work security for the local synagogue here. And because they've had threats, you know, anti-Semitic stuff. And I'm, you know, I help them. And I've got to know the rabbis a lot the last 4 or 5 years. And there's a couple that goes there that had a daughter when they first started going there. And the daughter was about 13 years old. Well, now the daughter's a son. They transitioned into a son. And now you'd think that on Shabbat, when the Jewish people meet, for them to take the Torah scrolls out of the ark that they have there, they have to have a minion, which is 10, not those little guys in that movie, but it's a minion is 10 men, right? So they have to have 10 men to take this out. Well, if the girl who transitioned to a boy is one of the, in other words, they recognize him as a man. All right. And the thing with the Jewish people is that the sanctity that they have for human life, all right, that the human life, they will go out of their way not to hurt somebody's feelings. At least the conservative, these guys, now just normal everyday people, I don't give a crap. They'll hurt your feelings, you know, just like we will here, you know, but they're very, they're very, because they believe that a piece of God has been placed in each one of us. And if they offend you, then they offend God. So they don't want to do that, right? Okay. So they go out of their way not to. And that's where I get a lot of stuff that I look at the Hebrew part of it. Now, at night, I can't, like, as far as Chris, as you said about those guys, about what they're talking about, I'd like to look into it and see what they found. But I know that at least I know for the Jewish part of it, it means it's homosexuality. All right. But there's those areas of purple, of gray, of everything else that we need to look at. We can't, you know, we can't just say it's black or it's white, you know? And like I said, for me, and this goes back to what we talked about the destiny part before, for me, I can't, you know, I'm not attracted to that. So I can't understand that, but I'm not going to say it's wrong for you, cause I don't know what's going on inside your head.
Right. But but you have to also say that you're destined to have a gay son. And so you're destined to have this struggle. So God wanted you to struggle with this part of your faith for a reason.
Yeah, probably, you know, but I know for one thing, I'm not going to stop loving him. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to disown him. Whatever he does, it's still going to be a joy to my heart because he's my son, you know. And if he wants to transition, which he's not, you know, as far as I know, he's not going down that road. But he, you know, if he does, he does. It's his life, man. You know, it's your choices. You got to do what you need to do. You do you, you, and I do me. You know, I'm not going to force you. And it seems like that's the message we have with Christianity is that, you know, if you don't do this, then this, right? And there's always a consequence. Well, yeah, there's consequences to decisions that we make always. But what happened to your wife, man? She's gone.
Our kids, it's that time of night. And so they are.
I was just looking down there. I was like, what is she staring at? Oh, wait, no, she's not there.
They're murdering each other right now. So Elizabeth's handling that real quick. But no, this is a great conversation, Steve. And we're going to have to wrap because we're going over our normal time. And I know I
had
some time earlier talking about the whole Destiny thing, but I think there's so many different directions that we could go with talking with you. And I really, really enjoy this. I don't know if, you know, Chris would say the same thing because he's a little bit further removed from, you know, Christianity than I am. And I think that's why when I camped out on that question earlier, and I do apologize, I'm trying not to rehash any of it. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what I believe in it too, because at one point, you know, Destiny was huge for me, and it's not something that I think about that much anymore. You know, I think anymore, it's something that I just take each day as it comes. It's something like you said about, you know, your destiny right now is, you know, loving your wife. And I feel like I'm having a lot of those same realizations with, you know, my kids and my wife. Is just what do I need to do to give them their best experience? You know, and so for me, it's like learning to be more kind. You know, when you're single and I'm hanging out with my asshole friends like Chris, it doesn't matter if I'm kind or not. You know, they think the best of me anyway. But it's like when you have, you know, a bunch of hormonal females, your children, it's a different posture you have to have. And so I think, you know, Destiny's tied into all that. I think there's a reason why I have three girls. You know, I don't know what that is. I think maybe there's danger sometimes when we start attaching stuff and looking for destiny, because that's when you get some extremist things that could happen. I want to make sure that I clarify whatever I was saying earlier. I don't think that it's all good. I just like the perspective you have, and it is very selfless as far as laying down your life for the other human. You know, is admirable. And yeah, it's unfortunate that the church abuses people like that. Mm-hmm. And what's your thought, Chris? You look like you're about to say something.
No, I'm just gonna, I guess, echo what you said. I'm happy to have a conversation with you about this stuff, and I really appreciate that you're, you know, not really backing down to these people who are, they've given themselves authority in this church. And essentially are canceling you just because you know, they feel threatened by you or disagree with you. You know, this is the original cancel culture, you know, right here.
Yeah.
Shunning.
Yeah. the church. Yeah. I'm like, that's why it's, I would love to talk about a lot of this different stuff in your perspective. And the reason I even tried to stay so long on that earlier is because of your philosophical, I value, kind of just your thought processes, even if we don't land in the same spot. It kind of helps either solidify what I'm thinking already, or be like, oh, you know, maybe I should give this some more thought. And it seems like you're, you know, and that's what I respect about you. You're willing to allow life to dictate your theology more than theology dictate your life. And so
there you go.
As a pastor or man of God, I respect you for that more than anything else, and would love to have you on for a part two to talk about maybe some political stuff, or even more of like looking at the church and all the negative experiences you've had, but the fact that you still have hope in that institution, I think is something that could be an episode in of itself too, because I don't see it. I think that, like, if God is doing any big, great move right now, it's basically removing his people from those places, because those places, like, it's all about capitalism, and it's not Christianity. It has nothing to do with Jesus whatsoever anymore. But there's a marketable white Jesus that's being sold with it. And so...
They call him the Bee Gees Jesus because he looks like Maurice Gibb.
Colonizer Jesus is what I like to call him.
Yeah.
but yeah, man.
Bee Jesus.
Appreciate the hell out of you. Anything else that you want to say or promote? Sounds like you're doing some things live stream. How can people find you? They want to, hear what you got going on. Like, Where can they find you?
Yeah, we I started a website. It's called Rock the World. But the website is steveduplantis.com. It's basically it's me and my wife, and we're just transparent. You know, we want to help people. We want to, you know, we're not in it for money. We're not in it for anything. And we just want to, you know, some rough times going on right now, you know, and people, they need hope. They need hope in something, you know, and to go on, because a lot of people are checking out, you know, and we can't have that. And because, you know, like I said, human life, it is important. So that's steveduplantis.com. I have my my live stream 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights. It's Alaska time. So it depends on where you guys are at. It's way late for you guys, are probably in bed by that time. But we are actually, we are moving at the end of the summer because my wife can't handle the cold anymore. You know, with the conditions she's got. So we're actually moving to Florida, and we'll be down probably Ocala area. That's where we're looking at right now. And then the live stream will come on a lot earlier. So I'll be on your time yeah, schedule that time.
You'll be on the East Coast.
And then Nick, my son, he's in South Carolina. Well, not now. He's actually in Canada because his wife is from Canada, so they're spending some time with the in-laws there, and then he's headed to South Carolina, so he'll be there. And Noelle and Andrew, they'll still be in Alaska for right now. Andrew's probably going to get out. He wants to go back to Boston.
I thought he was in Boston, but he had moved back to Alaska then.
Yeah, his apartment caught on fire, and he lost everything, dude. And then he came back.
That's crazy. At least he was okay.
Yeah, he didn't have a whole lot, you know, but still, what he had was gone. And then he came back in like right before Thanksgiving, and then he's just kind of, you know, he wanted to leave, but then he's like, I'll stay here for now. So he's gonna, we're getting along. So. That's good, and I like him. I like him being here. You know, I mean, I want to have an empty nest, but at the same time, I love my kids. You know, so
cool. Well, appreciate you again, maybe we'll do this another time. But thanks, Steve, and thanks for checking us out. That's a really awkward hard out. Peace.
Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.